Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. Yes, I'm hoarse today, but it isn't related to the subject we're covering, seasonal allergies. All that is one of the subjects. We have a great guest for you today. Dr. Lyndon Mansfield is an expert who's been practicing in the field of allergies and immunology for a number of years. He's a graduate of Thomas Jefferson University and its medical school and practices in El Paso, Texas. I'm hoarse because I have a seasonal problem, not related to allergies, related to yelling at the basketball team and for the basketball team in our town, Cleveland. So I hope you'll forgive me for that. This is guest segment 894B. That's correct, 894B. And there is, of course, an 893A, which is the best news of the week. 894B, the guest, Dr. Lyndon Mansfield, seasonal allergies and allergy treatments. Dr. Mansfield, thanks for being on.
My pleasure.
And now tell us, the prediction is that this will be a worse allergy season, especially up here in the Northeast. Why is that?
Well, the factors usually that contribute to that are rain and then hot weather following the rain. If you make a bad generalization, tree pollen is more driven by just the trees having underground water. But again, if they have a lot of rain or a lot of storm like you did in Northeast, you will then have pretty well-hydrated plants, and they will, when it gets warm, make a lot of pollen. The plants interpret that, I think, is good news.
And the guess is, if you will, that this season will be worse. Is it worse throughout the country or just in the Northeast? And
well, as I said, I think the weather, the winter weather you guys had, the unusual amount of snow and rain is contributing. You know, in places where there's more dry, like Phoenix has been fairly droughty and our area is in a small drought, the pollen counts tend to go down.
And so we've had what I would consider a fairly significant late spring with a lot of rain, and especially in this Northeast here where I broadcast from, with both a lot of rain and colder weather. But now everything seems to be blooming at once. Trees, grasses, everything is all of a sudden bright green. Allergies contribute one to another? In other words, if I've got a tree allergy, is it more likely because I've got that I will end up with a grass allergy as well?
Well, statistically, it's not a guarantee, but yes, it's more likely. I thought you meant, if you're having symptoms from your tree pollen and the grass pollen to which you are allergic also is blooming, you tend to get more sensitive. So it maximizes your symptoms.
And the as we go through this, what is an allergy? Let's just clarify. So I'm allergic to ragweed pollen in the fall. And a number of people are allergic to dogs or cats or tree pollen or grass in the spring. What is an allergy specifically?
An allergy is actually the old name for allergy means strange reaction. Unfortunately, the strange reactions become very common in our population. It's an immune response that is inappropriate for the danger represented by the antigen, the thing it's responding to. The allergens, you know, for most people still even today, are innoxious. However, a group of people, partly based on genetics, and we think now epigenetics may be involved, will make an inappropriate response in the antibody class of IgE to the allergen and have symptoms when exposed, further exposed to the allergen, in the sense of, depending upon the degree of exposure and where the exposure comes, any from rhinitis to asthma to skin problems. So it's an inappropriate response. The body is doing the wrong thing, although it thinks it's doing the right thing.
And
I know that doesn't make sense exactly, but it acts to these, what for most people are innoxious particles or proteins and lipoproteins in nature, in a way that is bad for the body.
And so, but is this it's an attempt by the body to try and fight a foreign protein, if you will, or allergen?
Yeah.
Is it just an over-response, or is it, if you will, something we shouldn't respond to at all?
Well, most people get away with minimal or no response, the people who aren't allergic. So we think in general, like everything else in medicine, there's nothing totally true 100% of the time, that these are inappropriate responses, that they're directed against the shapes in nature that the average person in society can handle without any problems. So it's inappropriate. It is hyperreactive in the sense of the clinical symptoms, and it does change the physiology of the allergic person, but it really is an inappropriate response.
And now we're told that antihistamines often work to decrease the symptoms. What are the other drugs, and why do antihistamines work so well, if they do, other than their side effects?
Well, antihistamines block the receptors on cells. So what happens first is the cells, with an interaction between the IgE-specific antibodies, those are the proteins that the allergic person makes, on the cell surface of certain cells, typically the mast cell, but other cells, will then release these chemical mediators. The major chemical that's released is histamine, and the most antihistamines block just what we call the H1 receptor. There are actually four receptors, and therefore they have a variety of effects, but mostly it takes care of the rhinorrhea, the sneezing, and some of the itching of allergic rhinitis, but there are other factors involved.
Now, histamines also cause us to feel, at least when I take them or took them, I felt sleepy.
Okay. The reason for that is that a lot of the antihistamines pass the blood-brain barrier, and histamine receptors in the brain are, you know, required for alertness. So if you block them, you lose some of your alertness response.
And when I lose some of that alertness response, what are the other side effects that the antihistamines, and what are the other drugs we can use for this?
Okay, well, there is, you know, besides that, some of them, the older ones, are drying, you know, and the fact that they have cholinergic responses too. The other drugs, the more modern drugs, include antihistamines that don't pass the blood-brain barrier quite as much, that include intranasal steroids, intranasal antihistamines, intranasal antihistamine steroid combinations. And then finally, for, you know, there are a group of natural that have helped some people with allergic rhinitis.
Now, one of the substances released is a what we call immune globulin, and there are different classes of immune globulins that attack these proteins. What are the classes?
Well, the immune globulins are A, B, C, D, and E. And there are some in, G. I forgot. I made it alphabetical. But the immunoglobulin classes were really first defined by how they move on electrophoresis paper in the laboratory. But the immunoglobulin G immunoglobulins generally in usual amounts are help to protect us. They also can cause disease if they're in excessive amounts or they're directed against an inappropriate target. The IgA is mainly an antibody class of immunoglobulins that's used at the mucous membrane and in our stomach. IgD is some kind of precursor immunoglobulin, and those cells that make the IgD, Ig delta, often change into an IgG or an IgM secreting type of thing. IgM is the major early onset protective body class, and then it's followed by IgG, which tends to be more specific and perhaps more effective because it is more specific.
And now, correct me if I'm wrong, please. So IgA is often related to food. Is that, and IgE airborne, or is that just an artificial description that I've heard?
No, IgA is a lot of times a normal response to food antigen and would not cause people problems. IgE response to food proteins is what causes food allergy.
And all of these all of these can be associated not only with wheezing and coughing and, if you will, nasal stuffiness and production of nasal secretions, but also with shortness of breath and headache and itchy eyes. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so now, what's the step up in treatment you would use with patients?
Well, there's so many things now that people can get over the counter without a prescription. I certainly, if you're comfortable with a simple antihistamine or a naturopath and it gives you relief and is safe, that's reasonable. The next step, of course, would be go to the intranasal steroid sprays or the intranasal combination sprays. Now, the combination and the intranasal antihistamine require a doctor's prescription. Intranasal steroids are now plentiful in the marketplace.
And so if one of us gets a symptom, say to cats, we're allergic to cats. So do you first, in your regimen, Dr. Mansfield, do you first go to an H1 blocker, an antihistamine that affects the H1 receptor, or do you first go to something over the counter, or how do you think about this?
Well, the way I think about it is most of the time, the people I see as a specialist would have had alternative treatment already. And so basically, by the time I get to see them, I still tell them to use intranasal steroids if they're still having symptoms, because they don't come to me if the over-the-counter stuff works. You know how it works in medicine. And so unless they're intensely curious, they really don't want to be evaluated for a specific allergy. They just want to be comfortable. I'd like to put in a plug, though. The one other thing that happens with people when they're having allergic rhinitis is probably a significant amount of sleep disturbance. That's an area that I've been interested in other people. And it's been shown treating allergic rhinitis is not a trivial disease for these people. You can show differences in quality of life. You can show differences in performance on, computerized testing. They also have a lot of complaints. So that, allergic rhinitis sometimes is like the Rodney Dangerfield of I hope everybody knows who Rodney Dangerfield was, chronic illness, because, it doesn't get any respect at times.
So, So people come to you, obviously, once they're having problems. And so one of the therapies is the H1 blockers, which you can get over the counter, I guess. And they're known as what? Cimetidine is one of the common ones.
Oh, no. Cimetidine is an H2. So, I'm sorry. Cetirizine. It sounds the same.
Cetirizine
is an H1.
And then where do you go from there?
Well, generally, depending upon, you have to evaluate, first of all, I get a history and find out how much the person is suffering, how much disability they're getting, and then I will usually proceed to an intranasal corticosteroid, typically, and again, they get those over the counter now, and if they have significant enough symptoms, you know, as an allergy specialist, I would use allergen immunotherapy.
So what is an allergen immunotherapy? Describe what you're talking about.
Okay. It's giving graded but increasing doses of the material to which the person is allergic until you eventually decrease, you hyposensitize the person. It then takes more of the exposure or higher pollen levels to cause them problems. It unfortunately doesn't work in everyone, but it can be very useful when it works.
And now you were sent to us by a company that has something that they call a prehistamine. What's that?
Well, that's one where they didn't bother to ask me. A lot of studies with vitamin B12, either parenterally or by lozenge, have shown a decrease and a blunting, a decrease in the total amount of allergic antibody, total Ig, but also interestingly, in at least in a couple of studies, a blunting of the expected post-seasonal rise in specific Ig. So you're ragweed allergic. So normally, after a ragweed season, if you're taking antihistamines or whatever you take for relief, the level of Ig antibody directed against ragweed proteins will go up. And at least in a couple of the studies with B12, that expected rise did not occur. It was blunted. It was less when compared to placebo. That meant that it has some effect, typically, it's clearly on Ig metabolism. And it looks like for mouse experiments, at least, that it has some effect on some of the cytokines. Those are the chemicals released that are involved with the allergic reaction. It decreases them. And as deficiency, and in mice you can do a deficiency state, they're increased. So there is this kind of teasing data about a B12, which is really a very basic factor, for human metabolism and is involved in DNA synthesis. And so it'll become more complicated as we understand things more. But it appears that if it's operating, it has to be operating by affecting new protein synthesis.
So this, the therapy is called what?
Allergex.
Allergex.
Allergex. It's really a lozenge you take twice a day that contains 3.3 milligrams of vitamin B analogs. I think it's methylcyanocobalamin and hydroxycyanocobalamin.
And do you use that in your practice?
It's been given to some of my patients, and the results have been what I expected. Works for some, but not for all.
So what you're telling us is that with allergy and with the practice of allergic prevention medicine or allergic treatment medicine, there's a trial and error component, and not everything works for everything, and some work well and some don't work well, even in our family members that are related.
Yeah, I mean, This is obviously because, you know, we're dealing with a number of variables. Like, for instance, you're having a bad season up in Northeast. It's a quieter season down here. And so what you would need to give people relief changes, again, by the intensity of the exposure. So, you know, that's the way it is. You know, medicine, biology. But there are clearly, even within the same family, what appear to be different immune response genes. So that how they respond to stimuli is different.
We've been talking with Dr. Lynn Mansfield, M-A-N-S-F-I-E-L-D. He's a physician graduate of the Thomas Jefferson University and a practitioner of allergy and immunology for over 50 years. I can't believe that you look much younger than that, Dr. Mansfield.
You get good genes from your parents, right?
That's correct. Who practices in El Paso, Texas. He's been talking to us about allergy treatment and allergy medicine. One of the newer therapies he's mentioned is Allergex, which is allergx.com. And it is one of the over-the-counter remedies or treatments for seasonal allergies. We're having a bad season of it in the Northeast because of the prolonged rain and coldness, and now great pollen season as everything is blooming at once. We'll get to sometime in the future what therapies to use for ragweed other than the same therapies of a H1 blocker, histamine 1 blocker, and some of the other over-the-counter medicines such as Allergex, some of the non-over-the-counter such as nasal steroids at a future date. But in the meantime, Dr. Mansfield, thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and experience with us. We'll be right back on another You, the Owner's Manual guest segment next week. That'll be 895B. We have a wonderful guest lined up for you. And do download, in fact, the news of the week, the You, the Owner's Manual, top medical news, but especially what it means for you. This is a great week of news, so don't miss it. 894A segment will be wonderful for you. So keep downloading us and keep telling your friends about us. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. Thanks again.